Welcome to the Three Creeks Church Podcast. We're a church in Gahanna, Ohio that exists to help people find and follow God. We hope this message encourages you, challenges you, and helps you discover how much God really loves you.
Thank you, Brad. Good morning, Three Creeks. My name is Joel, and I get to be the pastor here. I did not know that Chase could play the piano until right now. Look at him. Man, let's go, man. Thank you guys so much. Chase and Chriselli joined the team a couple years ago, and since then had a little boy named River. And now River gets to come to set up and tear down at 6:30 a.m., and he's up here in a stroller, just getting the words of these songs poured over him. So very grateful for you guys. Love you so much. Hey, we're in this series called Seven, where we're going through the seven things that Jesus said while he was on the cross. It's our belief at this church that Jesus Christ was the most important person who ever lived, and that his crucifixion was the most important moment of his life. This has been a great series. I've loved it. It has been, I'll call it, a little bit more theological, perhaps, than some of the other series that we've done. And that's good. That's important. It's important for us to think deeply about these things, to know God, to know his word, and not just have a surface level faith. But every once in a while, when we're about to jump into something that feels a little bit deeper, I get a little nervous. Because I've spent enough time around churches that love to know things, and then it stops there, where it just becomes something where we leave on a Sunday morning, or we leave from community group going, so, oh, wow, I didn't know that before. But then we just leave it as head knowledge. And so sometimes I get a little bit nervous that this thing's going to stay in our heads and it's not going to make its way into our hearts, and then it's not going to work itself out into our hands. I loved Julie Gorham's question on the community group this past week. The last question in the whole list of questions was, what fruit has this series produced in your life? In other words, what difference has it made to think about the cross, to think about Christ for 5 weeks with two more messages to go in this series? What difference has it made? Has it worked itself out into your hands? My prayer for us this series has been that these things that we learn, what we have learned, will inspire us to love Jesus and live like him, that he would be our inspiration. We talk about this a lot here at Three Creeks. We talk about this idea of walking in the way of love like Jesus did, living in an others-oriented way, parking our cars in an others-oriented way, showing up to church on time in an others-oriented way, just living every part of our life, thinking about others before ourselves. We talk about trying to be like Jesus in this way. And one of the ways that we've done that as a church on the whole is we've tried to be a church that loves our city, that sees people that are in need in Gahanna and says, man, we want to try to help. And one way that we do that, we have a few ongoing ministries to our city, but one way that we do that every year is we call it the Gahanna Gift Shop. And it's a Christmas store. It's a one-day thing. A couple hundred families from Gahanna come and shop for Christmas for their families during a time of need. And every time, I mean, it's great. And we've been doing it for 8 years in a row. Every time I leave that thing, I just go, man, I just wish we did things like this more often. But Christmas is once a year. You know, it's a 4th of July gift shop. It doesn't have the same ring to it. And I just go, man, I wish that we did more things like this more often. And then, you know what? Lo and behold, our local impact director, Mackenzie Davis, and I had a meeting 6 weeks ago, and she came up with this idea. I get to be the one that shares it with you. It's kind of our summer gift shop. We're calling it the Three Creeks Thrift Shop, all right? So the Three Creeks Thrift Shop, for some of you, thrifting is a hobby. For others, it is a necessity. We know of at least 500 families in our city that would describe themselves as struggling to get food on the table. They are financially going paycheck to paycheck, and the costs of life weigh heavy on these families. And we as a church want to walk in the way of love and be generous to others like God has been generous to us. And so this Three Creeks Thrift Shop, here's the idea. This is Mackenzie's. Don't even think for a second I came up with this. This is all her, and I love it. So here's your excuse. here's the final nudge you need to do your spring cleaning and to do the purge. You guys know the purge? All the clothes that don't fit anymore, all the clothes that your kids grew out of, all the clothes that, man, maybe you just have too many of one thing. Let's get them together, collect them, wash them, pack them up, and in 2 weeks on Sunday morning, April 27, we're going to park a trailer out front by the courtyard, and on your way in, you just drop your bags right on top of the trailer of clothes that are that you would still wear, that somebody else is going to go, yes, like that, that's a nice piece of clothing. I'll take that. And we're not going to have time to wash it, so we need you to wash it. So take it there, and then what we're going to do on that afternoon is we're going to drive it over to the well, and then that Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday, that whole week from 6:30 to 8, we're going to sort them, fold them, spread them out, display them. So if you're interested in volunteering in for this, kind of in the build-up to it, then you can sign up to serve one of those evenings. I already saw there's a ton of people that are signed up for different nights, and I think it's going to be a lot of work. So we need some more of you guys. So April 27, that whole week, you can go there and fold and sort and kind of get it ready. And then on Saturday, May 3rd, we're going to have the Three Creeks Thrift Shop. Families are going to sign up. They're going to come through, and we're just going to donate to them. We're just going to give to them in their time of need. And we just want to be a church that says, like, we're trying to do this not because we're anything special, because of what God has done for us. He has given us so much. How could we hold on to these things? So if you want to sign up to be a sorter, or if you want to sign up to serve at that store, like everything at Three Creeks, text Three Creeks to 97,000. The links are there. Sign up. And man, I have a sneaky suspicion this thing's gonna work and really hopefully gonna be a blessing to some people in our city. And we're doing this. We're not doing this because for any other reason other than because Jesus Christ has changed us. Like, we want to walk in the way of love and think about other people first because that's what he did. He is our inspiration. I'm not saying this to sound dramatic. He is the most important person to ever live. And the crucifixion was the most important moment of his life. He opened his mouth 7 times on the cross. 3 of them were to other people that were around him. Remember, he looked at the criminal on the cross next to him and said, "Today you will be with me in paradise." And he looked down at the Romans who were killing him and he said, "I am thirsty." And he looked down at his mom and at his best friend John. He said, "John, take care of my mom. Mom, John is now your son." 3 of them were to people around him. 3 of them were directly to God the Father. Remember the first thing he said? He said, "Father, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing." Last week, Garrett did an amazing job of explaining what Jesus meant when he said, "Father, why have you forsaken me? My God, why have you forsaken me?" And today we're looking at this phrase when Jesus says at the very end of his life, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." It's important to note that voluntarily Jesus put his life in the hands of sinners. And then he voluntarily commits his spirit to the hand of the Father. Let's just read those 3 verses again, and then I'll try to explain a little bit of what these things mean. In verse 44 through 46, it says that it was about noon. Jesus had been on the cross for 3 hours at this point. It was about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. For the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. And Jesus called out with a loud voice. The volume is not a part of the narrative in any of the other 7. In a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Verse 44, it was about noon. Darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. The whole land. This 3-hour darkness is actually recorded in Roman history archives. This is not a fable. This is not folklore. This is not something that just the Bible people wrote. In secular history, it's recorded that there was darkness over the land for 3 hours. And some people try to say it was some kind of solar eclipse or whatever, but remember, this is in Passover. And I don't really understand the moon completely, but what I know is that Passover only happened where there's a full moon, and when there's a full moon, there can't be a solar eclipse. And so it's impossible for those two things to overlap. Darkness came over the land. It's recorded in history. Imagine darkness out of nowhere for 3 hours. You can imagine darkness for 11 minutes, can't you? Do you remember 1 year and 5 days ago? April 8th, 2024, the total solar eclipse. Do you remember this? The birds start going to their nest. We were afraid the raccoons were going to come out in the middle of the day. We all drove 45 minutes and took selfies with our glasses on. Do you remember this? 11 minutes of total darkness. And it was eerie. It was noticeable. Those of us that drove to the place where there was the total eclipse, you went, man, I'm so glad I did that because that was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. This is what happened over the whole land. Imagine being 20 miles away in a village outside of Jerusalem, not really knowing that anything of importance was happening in Jerusalem, and you're just out with your family or out doing your work, and it's dark for 3 hours. You've got to be thinking to yourself, what is going on? What is happening? And if you're in Jerusalem and you knew what happened, and you knew that Jesus had just been killed, you've got to be thinking, man, something significant just happened. Something important just happened. In the next line it says, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. What do you know about this? What do you know about this curtain in the temple that was torn in two? The temple was really the central religious space for the Jews at the time. And there was a curtain right in the middle that divided the holy place from the holy of holies. This is the curtain that Luke is talking about here. Matthew in the gospel records that this same very curtain was torn in this very moment, and it was torn from top to bottom. In other words, God is the one who did this. This was not a man-made thing. God is at work in this time and space. It's recorded that it took about 300 men to move this curtain. That's how big and heavy it was. It says that it was inches thick. 300 men would move it. It says it was about 60 feet high. And just in case you thought to yourself, oh, I'll bet you some Jesus followers got in there, and I'll bet you they just took some scissors and kind of snipped the bottom, and then they got 12 guys on each side, and they each pulled, and it ripped up to the top. No, no, no. It ripped from the top to the bottom. This was the work of God. What does it mean? Why does the curtain tear? Because in the Old Testament, in the Holy of Holies, behind this curtain is the manifest presence of God. It's where the presence of God is the thickest. It's where he's at. And in this point in history, only one person, one time a year, a high priest who offers all of these sacrifices can go into the Holy of Holies one time per year after cleansing himself. And when the veil was torn, when the curtain is torn, what God is saying to everyone, he's saying, no more sacrifices need to be made. Jesus is enough. And nobody needs a high priest to go and intermediate for you. Mediate for you. You don't need somebody in between us. God, when he ripped the curtain open, he said, I'm available to everybody. You don't have to sacrifice any more animals. You don't need a special person to come meet with me. Everybody gets to come close to God again. That's why symbolically the curtain is torn. Think about this. A couple months later, there are these Jewish people that don't want to believe that Jesus is who he says he is. They still reject that Jesus is the Messiah. Imagine being around one of them when they described re-sewing the curtain. Because they had to put it back together. They couldn't have this religious activity be changed on them. Imagine that religious activity prevents people from being in a relationship with God. You ever heard of such a thing? And then it says that Jesus calls out in a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. This is a very, very special moment, because right here we see the Savior Jesus back again in communion with God. Remember the first phrase that Jesus used on the cross. He said, Father, forgive them. Jesus in that moment felt like he was his Father. And then at the end he says, Father, Into your hands I commit my spirit. Jesus hung on the cross before he died for 6 hours. Three of them suffering at the hands of man. Three more hours suffering at the hand of God. And for 3 hours, the communion between Jesus and the Father was broken. It was the first time that this relationship had ever been broken. For eternity, they had been in communion with one another. And then in this moment, Jesus was forsaken so that you and I never have to be. For 3 hours, their communion was broken. But the darkness passed and the cup of the righteous anger of God was poured out. And here we see Jesus re-entering communion with his Father, never to be broken again. He says, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. In other words, Father, I trust you completely. I trust you. In Jesus' darkest moment of his life, perhaps seconds before he breathed his last, he says, Father, I trust you. I trust you. And it says that he did it in a loud voice with everything he had left in the tank. I trust in God. Do you trust God? Do you trust God? Here's a very related question. Do you worry a lot? Would you consider yourself, have you labeled yourself as a worrier, as somebody who worries a lot? There is, to be fair, quite a bit to worry about these days. Red food dye, for one. And inflation. And interest rates. And the cost of eggs. And then every time we get a headache or we feel a little dizzy, we punch our symptoms into Google. And it's like, you've got 3 days to live. Like, we're towards the end. Right? And then on top of that, we've got our safety. We've got the safety of our children. We've got parents to worry about. We've got job situations that we're just worried about. We've got singleness that we're just worried about. And on top of all of that, AI is just going to take over. Like, we're all done. That's coming, right? We think about these things, and it's so easy this day and age to just be consumed with worry. And then we just resign to it, and we actually say out loud, I'm a worrier. I'm a worrier. And we wonder, is it even possible not to worry? There's a famous passage in the Bible. Maybe you've heard of it. It's okay if you haven't. We actually put it on the screen during that time of portion where Paul writes to the Ephesians. He goes, rejoice in the Lord always. Always. I say it again, rejoice. God is near to you. He says, if you're ever feeling anxious, if you're ever starting to get worried, the ticket out of that is to pray with thanksgiving and just give it to God. And there's this peace that transcends understanding. In other words, you can't even describe this peace that will come over you when you pray. And as a good Christian person, I've read that before, and I go, man, okay, then all of this stuff that I'm worried about, I'm just going to pray about it, and then zap, God will just kind of remove it from my life. And that hasn't been my experience every time. I don't know about you. Have you ever prayed about something and then immediately continued to worry about it? Like I have. I think about this. You know, have you ever thought about, have you ever led somebody? Like whether you maybe lead a team at work or you oversee somebody even on some project or maybe you have children in your home, but essentially somebody who's looking for you to give them any sort of instructions. And have you ever given instructions to someone and then immediately had the thought like, yeah, they're probably not going to do that. Like that's probably not going to happen. You know, I want to believe the best, but yeah, I don't think that's probably going to happen. Like when Morgan and I send Willow to clean the basement. She's 4 years old. We send her down. We say, Willow, it's time to clean the basement. It's your turn. And she goes down there. And Morgan and I just look at each other like, who's going to go down there in 7 minutes and find out that she's not doing it? Because she just isn't dependable. Have you ever given instructions to somebody? And it's like, you just tell them once, and you know it's a done deal. Like, they are going to do it. They are going to do it just like you said. They are going to follow through. You are not going to have to circle back and remind them. Done deal. Maybe you've experienced that. I've experienced that, and I've experienced both in my life. What's the difference? Well, the second person, you know that you can depend on them. They have a proven track record of coming through, of being faithful, of being there, of being trustworthy. So what does that tell you about how much you trust God? How do you, when you go to Him and you pray and you give to Him these things that are prone to weigh you down and that you worry about, you give it to Him. Which one do you kind of, which one of those two people is God more like in your mind and in your heart after that time? What does that tell you about how dependable you think that God is? As a dad, as a father, one of the greatest like tragedies I can think of is if I would come home from work and I would walk in and all three of my kids are upstairs just like talking and they're like, man, I wonder if there's going to be food on the table tonight. I wonder if Dad's going to get a paycheck this week. And they're just consumed with worry and they're just thinking about all the things that have to happen. That would make me so sad as a dad. I would just want to go up there and sit in the circle on the floor with them and say, guys, I'm your dad and I'm going to take care of you. There's going to be food. Mom makes food every single night. Like, it's going to be, you're safe here with me. I'm dependable. You can rely on me. Like, as a dad, I want to walk in the door and I just want to hear laughter and I want to hear joy and I want to hear this sense out of my kids, not really with the words, but with their actions that, man, Dad's home and Dad's going to take care of us. Like, we can count on Dad. That is the experience that I want my kids to have. And I know that that's the experience that God, our Father, wants us to have as we make our way through this life where we are so prone to worry and overthink it. Jesus even says in the most famous sermon ever, he says, what are you guys worried about? You think it's going to add time to your life by being worried? He says, look at the birds. They're not concerned with the worm stock, like the worm inventory for the next day. They just go to bed and they wake up and then they're taken care of. And Jesus says, don't I care more about you than that? Is it even possible? Here's the question. Is it even possible to not worry? So many of us have resigned to just being a worrisome person, a worrier. And that doesn't align with the dependability and the trustworthiness of a God, of God the Father, who is good and sovereign and cares about us. And I know it's not as simple as just saying, okay, fine, I just won't worry anymore. But because of the goodness and sovereignty of God, believe it or not, we don't have to worry. Like, He is good enough and powerful enough that can be pulled out from our lives. I had this picture. We were praying with the production team before church, and I just had this picture of you guys walking in those doors today and just having these like physical weights and chains on you, these worries of your life that you're just consumed by and you think about and you can't sleep and you wake up in the middle of the night thinking about it. And I just had this picture of you guys just getting to meet with God today in a way that allows you to just kind of just drop Him and just walk out feeling free and trusting in the goodness of God the Father. Jesus, in the darkest moment of His life, says, Father, into Your hands I commit my spirit. A few years earlier, the Father had spoken over Jesus when He was baptized, this is my Son in whom I'm well pleased. And Jesus, at the very end of His life, looks around and in a loud voice says, this is my Father in whom I trust. I want to try something. We've done this just a handful of times before, and I really like doing this, and I just want to try to usher all of us into what we'll call just an encounter with God. I'm convinced more than ever that information doesn't really change people, but real encounters with God change people. And so this is called Emmanuel Prayer, or it's called Immersive Prayer, but what it is I just kind of get to MC, if you will, a conversation between you and Jesus. And you get to go to Jesus and have a conversation with him. And I believe that God speaks to people when we go to him and pray. The Bible says a lot that if we draw near to God, that he will draw near to us. It's a theme of the Bible. And so for about 5 minutes here, as we get ready to close our service, I just want to try to MC a conversation between you and Jesus. It's important that you don't try to put too much pressure on it. It's important that you don't kind of wonder in the middle of it, like, is this going good enough? You just kind of got to let it happen. It's almost like walking into a movie theater and watching a movie on a screen. You just let it happen. And then whatever God wants to say, we'll just let him say it. So do me a favor, if you would, just close your eyes and just settle in. Get comfortable. We're just going to be here for a few minutes, but I think it could be really important for you. This is a time and it's a space to hear from God. I want you to imagine being in one of your favorite places in the world, a place where you feel at ease. Go to that place and just find a place to sit down. And I want you to think about how it feels to be there. What time of day is it? What does it smell like? What does it sound like? And I want you to imagine Jesus himself walking towards you. And sitting next to you. Putting his arm around you. And now you're just going to ask Jesus some questions, and we're just going to let him answer. By his Spirit, we're just going to let him answer us. You look over at Jesus and you say, "Hey Jesus, what do you think about me and why?" Jesus, what is bringing you joy these days? Jesus, what am I worrying about too much? Get the sense that I'm just worrying too much about. And Jesus, what do you want me to do about that? And imagine Jesus just looking at you and just giving you a hug. And he stands up. He's about to walk away, but he says one more thing to you. What does he look at you and say? And then he walks away. can open your eyes. Sometimes when I do that, I feel like I don't get anything. And then sometimes when I do that, Jesus meets me in a really personal and powerful way. I hope that he met you even in those moments. And you know, when you ask that question to Jesus, like, Jesus, what am I worrying a lot about? The first time I did this a couple days ago, I literally felt like Jesus said to me, well, Joel, how long do you have? I said, I'm here. And he began to just show me things in my life that I had just been trying to keep control of. Even on the as I walked into church this morning, I just began to pray out loud, Father, into your hands, I commit my, and I just began to fill in the blank. I want to follow Jesus in surrender and in contentment and in commitment and in trust. And so this picture of Jesus on the cross, right before he's about to die, he says, Father, into your hands, I commit my spirit. And I just want to give you this prayer prompt this morning that you could pray too, just like Jesus, Father, into your hands, I commit my... What is it that God wants you to pray this morning? What is it that he wants you to get rid of? Father, into your hands, I commit my marriage. Father, into your hands, I commit my womb. Father, into your hands, I commit this situation at work. Father, into your hands, I commit my family members who aren't following you. Father, into your hands, I commit my singleness. Into your hands, God, I commit my health. I give it to you. I put it in your hands. Into your hands, I commit the well. Into your hands, I commit my depression. Into your hands, I commit the feelings of fear that keep me up at night. Father, into your hands, I give it to you. You're trustworthy. You're dependable. Is he good? Is he powerful? Does he care for us? Does he come close to us? The answer to those is yes, he does, and he can handle it. He says in his word that you should cast your cares on him, that he's not burdened by our trying to put things on him. He says, bring it to me. I can handle it. You can't handle it. I can handle it. Father, into your hands, I commit my, what is it for you? What is the prayer that God wants you to pray all week? Father, into your hands, into your hands, into your hands, I commit my, what is it for you? What is it for you? Maybe for somebody in here this morning, it's today. Today is the day for the first time ever you say, Father, into your hands, I commit my life. I've been trying to do it on my own. I've been trying to stiff arm you. I've been trying to keep you back away from me. I don't want you to intervene, but today's the day that I want to say, nope, I'm giving up doing it on my own. Today's the day. Father, into your hands, I commit my life. I want to follow you. Is today the day that you pray that prayer? It's very simple. It's the most important prayer you could ever pray. When Jesus said this, when he said, Father, into your hands, I commit my spirit, he wasn't just saying what was on his heart. It was what was on his heart, but it wasn't just what was on his heart. Jesus, in this moment, with all of these people around, wondering what he's going to say with a loud voice, you know what he does? He actually, essentially, says some song lyrics of a song that all of them would have known. As kids, they would have grown up singing this song. We know it as Psalm 31, but it's a song that they would have sung, and it's a song that would have brought to mind the faithfulness of God. You know how, like, we have these songs, you just hear one line, and it takes you to a place? Like, when I say, from the hills of Minnesota, or whatever, is that right? No, I don't think that's right. From the hills of somewhere. Man, I go right to the 4th of July, though. I start hearing God Bless the USA, and I'm like, man, throw up some fireworks. When I hear I Stay Out Too Late, when I hear that, I immediately go to a road trip with Morgan. That's when we first heard that song, and we would dance, and we would sing Shake It Off while we were in the car. If I ever hear the song More Than a Feeling by Boston, I can't not go to my college dorm room with Guitar Hero. Songs place us places where we remember, we have these vivid feelings, these emotions, just because there's a song that was sung. And we attach them to things. So Jesus, right in this moment at the end of his life when there's a lot of confusion, a lot of grief, and a lot of what's going to happen next, and holy smokes, it's just been dark for 3 hours. What is going on? Jesus sings this song called Psalm 31, and everybody there, their attention, Jesus is taking their attention off of the problems, off of the worry, and onto the faithfulness of God. And so I thought, man, we've never done this before, but let's try it. Would you guys stand? I'm not going to make you sing, but I am going to ask you to say Psalm 31 with me. This is one of those types of things where it's like a call and response where I'll read some of it, and then together as a church, we're just going to say out loud, we're going to declare this song, these words. Psalm 31 goes like this. I'll read the white part. You get to read the yellow part. It says, in you, Lord, I've taken refuge. Let me never be put to shame. Deliver me in your righteousness. Turn your ear to me. Come quickly to my rescue. Be my rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me. Since you are my rock and my fortress, for the sake of your name, lead and guide me. Keep me free from the trap that is set before me, for you are my refuge. Look at it. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Deliver me, Lord, my faithful God. I hate those who cling to worthless idols. As for me, I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in your love, for you saw my affliction and knew the anguish of my soul. You have not given me into the hands of the enemy, but have set my feet in a spacious place. Be merciful to me, Lord, for I am in distress. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and body with grief. My life is consumed by anguish and my years by groaning. My strength fails because of my affliction, and my bones grow weak. This is the end. Because of all my enemies, I'm the utter contempt of my neighbors, an object of dread to my closest friends. Those who see me on the street flee from me. I feel forgotten as though I were dead. I've become like broken pottery. For I hear many whispering terror on every side. They conspire against me and plot to take my life. But I trust in you, Lord. I say, you are God. Say that one more time. But I trust in you, Lord. I say, you are my God. God, even when we don't feel it, we today just choose to trust you. Father, into your hands we commit our... We give it to you. It feels a little crazy down here. Feels like there's a lot going on. Feels like there's a lot to worry about. But today's the day that we put it in your hands. And so we sing this song right now as an act of devotion, as an act of surrender, that we believe that you are trustworthy. We sing this to you.
Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. To find out more about our church, to give online, or to attend a service, visit threecreekschurch.com.